Mitzvah Tuf Yud Zayin, continuing in the middle in the paragraph beginning. Va'al Tisma, the Sefer Chinuch is telling you, don't be surprised. He's legislating your feelings. Ah, Lomar Vechia Biyado Shel Adam Limno Alivavu Misavu Sel Otsar Kol Kalichamda. How can you control your feelings? Ah, he just told you, don't be surprised. So, how can you prevent your heart from desiring a beautiful treasure, Shiira Birshus Chavero, Behu Mikulam Reik Verekam? Let's say you're a destitute, and you pass by the house of a billionaire. Yeah, of course you're gonna want what he has. How can the Torah tell you something that's physically impossible? We know Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachei Hashoris, that the Torah was not given to the angels. The Torah is given to people. That means everything that the Torah prescribes is physically possible to do. That's why we know also, you know, the famous occasion that we quote the principle of Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachei Hashoris is that we know that you're not allowed to eat bugs. So the question is, what's the minimum size of the bugs that you're not allowed to eat? So could it be...
What's considered a bug?
You might think that, oh, if you take a magnifying glass or even a microscope and you look at your lettuce and you see that there's some sort of organism living on your fruits and vegetables, so maybe you should say, well, you're not allowed to eat it. No, Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachei Hashoris. It's only things that can be seen with the naked eye. Again, that doesn't mean if somebody is legally blind and can just see with extreme difficulty, that obviously doesn't mean that. It means that a regular person, a regular human eyesight, would not be able to see it. So therefore, it doesn't count. You also have this issue with tefillin, that we know that tefillin have to be square. So the question is, you'll have some... Yeah. I mean, the different sheet doesn't really show exactly what parts of the tefillin have to be square. The stitching, whatever. But whatever parts of it have to be square, so sometimes you'll see people coming. I remember when I was on NCSY Kollel after 11th grade, there was a sofer that came to NCSY Kollel, and he was looking at everyone's tefillin, and he had a caliper, which is a very precise measurement instrument, and he's measuring the length and the width and the diagonal to make sure it's perfectly square within fractions of a millimeter. So the pastor says that that's not correct, that it just goes. If you take a look at it, it looks square, so that's called square.
Did your teachers put up with that? Did your teachers let that stand?
I don't think anyone was there, actually.
How many kids had that mess up, I wonder?
Not mine. I thought it was ridiculous even back then. But there were some students that were like, oh my gosh, I have to get my tefillin repaired. Okay, whatever. But fine. Yeah. Have to ask your local rabbi. You should have a perspective on this. But anyway, so how could they expect you to not to desire something that somebody else has if it's something you it's naturally you'd really really want? This is untrue. Something like this would only be said by a stupid person. Wicked and sinful. Not everything I just told you about the bugs and the squareness. Only what he's about to tell you about. That's true. What I just told you. Okay. So the kia umnam biad adam limno atzma machshavosa v'tavosa mikol mashayirtza. You can control your feelings. Again, he's not talking about that. If you walk past a billionaire's mansion, then you don't even the thought doesn't even pop into your head. Ooh, I'd like that. It means you dwell on it. You're not allowed to dwell on it. You have to tell yourself and convince yourself that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants everyone to have what they have, and that you're not entitled to anything that belongs to something else. Uvirshuso v'daito laharchik ulekariv cheftso b'chol hadvarim kirtzono. So that you can control your desire for a particular item if you really want. Velibo masur biyado, and your heart is given unto your hand. Al kol asher yachbots yatenu, that you have the power to meditate or who knows what, and you can make your thoughts go in a certain direction. Again, this is not talk about thoughts popping into your head, but rather you can choose what you dwell on and your thought processes that you engage in. And we know this from the Yom Noraim davening. So God knows he can search through, see through your innards. Roy Kalayos Valev, he sees your kidneys and your heart. That's like the kidneys is a metaphor for what? Kalayos Yoatzos. Kidneys are a metaphor for Seichel, that your common sense dwells in your kidneys. So we know that actually, physiologically, your common sense does not dwell in your kidneys. Everything is in your brain. But it's even in English, we use, we talk about the heart. Something that you're.
Really got heart.
So it doesn't mean that literally that you think with your heart. Everything is in the brain, but it's all it's a metaphor. Ein achas ktana o gedola tova o ra mikol machshavos adam nelemes mimenu velo nisteres mineged einov. That means God knows what you think. That's why only God is in a position to legislate this idea of losis ave. Obviously, an earthly government cannot legislate the thoughts of their group of people, the what they're governing. I mean, you could try to control people's thoughts by, you know, banning books or the legislating curricula for schools, but you can't legislate people's thoughts per se. So the only one who could enforce and dictate these types of things is God, which is why only the Torah prescribes certain thought processes. Yashiv Nakam Laover Ritzono Bilavavam. So God will eventually punish those who violate with their hearts. Venotzer Chesed Lo Alafim Laavav Hamifanim Laavodoso Machshavosam. So that people who turn their thoughts towards the worship of God as opposed to other things, it's always possible to do that. You're not talking about popping thoughts, but things you but you have to consciously make an effort to have your thoughts go in the direction of worship of God. So we know that if Gemara says famously, and this isn't talking about, this is talking about when the thought itself is a sin, but we know that famously the Gemara tells us that if you plan to do a mitzvah, and somehow you're prevented from doing so, so you get the mitzvah points for doing it. But if you do a mitzvah, and I'm sorry, but if you think that you're planning to do a sin, and you don't end up doing the sin, so you don't end up doing the sin, then God considers it as if you didn't do the sin. So it's a stira, right?
Well, not really. You're not punished for your.
Right, so then you shouldn't get the reward either.
Oh.
Either it goes by the thought or it goes by the action. So here, so God is nice.
Why not lechas?
I mean, obviously it's not.
Why not lechas chut, though? You could say lechas chut. You have the thought of doing the mitzvah.
No, you right, so you do.
So you, no, but even if you don't, you're saying that even if you don't.
Even if you don't do the mitzvah, you still get the.
You have lechas chut. You were hoping to do it. You were planning to do it. The mitzvah.
Correct. Well, you're also planning to do an Avera, and you just got prevented. That maybe, right? No. It doesn't mean you consciously decided not to do that.
Prevented.
No, no. It means you were planning,
but you didn't do it. So
right, you were planning to. You said you had enough. You're planning to get in your car and drive on Shabbos, and lo and behold, you lost your car keys. You can't get into your car. So therefore, God considers it as if you did not do the sin because you
maybe
didn't do
God
it.
God made it so you couldn't.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Okay. So fine. So that's a different story. But here is why I'm talking about the actual thought being a sin or not. She'ein tov la'adam, that a person's whole good essence, kimo amachshava tova v'hazaka, that best for a person is to have good and clear, pure thoughts. He raises kol amasim v'sofan. The thoughts are the beginning and end of all actions. V'zeru lefi adome inyan lev tov. Sheshibchu chachom v'maseches avos. So we know Pirkei Avos talks about how good it is to have a good heart. So does a good hearted mean like what we say in English, that you do nice things for people? Yisrael Rechinov says no. Maybe it means that you have a heart that thinks in a positive mitzvah oriented manner.
not mutually exclusive.
No, no, no. V'haraya she'elu chalukim b'inyonam v'nechshavim lishnayim. So the two things, lo sisave and lo sachmod, are two separate prohibitions, which we talked about last time. Hashamur b'mechilta lo sachmod beis reyacha. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Ulahalan hu omer lo sisave. Thou shalt not desire. L'chayev al taiva b'fnei atzmo, because it clearly says in the Mechilta that you receive a penalty for the desire, v'alachimud b'fnei atzmo, and for the coveting. B'sham ne'amar minayin shim nis'ave sofu lachmod. So this is a progression. Again, not that they're you get punished for each individually, but it's a progression. Shim nis'ave sofu lachmod. If you desire, you're going to covet. Tamulomar lo sis'ave velo sachmod.
Can you repeat again the difference between tachmod?
I was just going to ask that
question. So, lo sisave is purely in your head, desiring, and to focus your thoughts on desiring a certain object. Lo sachmod is when you take an active step and try to think of ways or execute ways to convince someone to actually give it to you, even though they don't really want to.
I mean, to actualize it,
Right. To harass someone until they actually give it to you, even because they don't really want to give it to you, is lo sachmod.
If you just want what your neighbor has, not his, but you just want, you'd like to have a beautiful mansion too.
I want his porch.
So that's fine.
Something like it, you mean?
Yeah, no, that's okay. What I mean, the whole point is that it's you want something. Yeah, the point of lo sisave ultimately is that it leads to incorrect possession of something that it doesn't really belong to you. But if you want an equivalent object, you say, I like that house. That's a nice house. You know, one day I'll make enough money and I want to build my house to look similar to that. That's fine. Again, not that we should necessarily be so crazy about money anyway, but...
But you don't want that person's house.
Correct. Just to say you want a similar object is... You go to someone's house and you see a nice piece of artwork or something, and you say, you know, I'd like to purchase that piece of artwork as well. If somebody owns the Mona Lisa and there's only one, you've got the French government, whatever. So if you're, that's not a person, okay. Maybe you are allowed to, maybe you are allowed to desire the Mona Lisa, okay. But the...
You're doing anything without getting it, so you're not stealing it.
Maybe you will, I don't know. So the... That's the difference below lo sisav and lo sachmod. So if you start with a desiring, then you're going to get to the coveting. So it says lo sisav velo sachmod. Fine. Minayin sheim chomad adam sofalig zol tamalomar v'chomdu sodos v'gozlu. It says in the prophet Micha that they shall covet fields and then steal. You see there the connection between coveting and stealing.
Past tense?
No, it's called Vav HaHipuch, and that you know that in biblical Hebrew, so the tenses are sometimes switched. Fine. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua hu gerchakas hagezel mibein b'nei adam to elis hakol. That as far as we stay away from stealing between different people, it's the best for society. Vaseichel ed neman badavar. So our common sense dictates this as well. Vein ba'arichos dinin shekolin yanem evar bakasov. So that I'm not going to go on a great length and explain all the halachos of lo sisave, because it's just pretty much plainly represented in the text of the Chumash. Don't have all different halachos. Benoegis b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zuchar munikevos. This applies in all places and all times to males and females. Gam kol b'nei ha'olam mechuyavim ba, but not only males and females of Jewish persuasion. Lefishi onaf lemitzvas gezel, shehi achas min hasheva mitzvos nishtavu aleim kol b'nei olam. It's one, because stealing, theft, robbery, is one of the sheva mitzvos b'nei noach. So it's one of the sheva mitzvos b'nei noach. So al tita bni bezeh cheshbon shel sheva mitzvos bnei Noach. You say, what do you mean? I count seven, and lo sisave is not one of them.
Oh, Lixol.
What?
Lixol is one.
Right, right, right. So stealing is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, but desiring is not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Haiduah v'amuskar b'talmud. It's not one of the... it's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach are not limited to these seven listed things. It means that these are the general categories of prohibited items for non-Jews. There are many details regarding the seven. One of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach is prohibited sexual relationships. So if that's the case, so what do you mean? So how do you have to? Do you have to know what that means? So just like you have to know what the arayos means, so you have to know what the gezel means. And what a part of what the gezel means, the stealing is, you're not allowed to desire also. Nechshav lohem derechal mitzvah achas. So the arayos is one mitzvah. Yeshva pratim. There are various details. Kigon iser aim. A non-Jew is not allowed to be with his mother. Viser achos min haim. Also a sister from the mother. The iser, how do we know that? That it only applies to a maternal sister and not a paternal sister? Doesn't mean you're required, it just means you don't get the death penalty. I mean, it doesn't mean you're encouraged to do that. Oh, excellent! Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah. Sarah was Avram's half-sister. Vafam no achosi bas avihi achlo basimi. It says...
It says the daughter of his father,
but not the daughter of his mother. So they were, at the time, they were B'nai Noach. They were not Jewish. So they were allowed to get married. Jews are not allowed to marry any siblings of any type. The Jews are not allowed to marry two sisters at the, during the lifetime of either one. That means even if they, he's not allowed to marry both at the same time. So even if you marry one sister and then you get divorced, then you're not allowed to marry the second sister. The first sister has to die specifically in order for you to be allowed to marry the second sister. And this is an excellent shidduch that has happened many, many times in history.
Yeah,
that what?
People still do.
No,
yeah, sure.
The sister dies in the,
and she knows her. She knows her nieces and nephews. She'll be a good surrogate mother.
Yeah, the sister, so the kids are at least raised by their aunt.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great shidduch. No, it's a. Oh yeah, okay. So did Eliezer ben Yehuda lahavdil.
Why didn't he give a different example of setting up court systems or whatever? That's in B'nai Noach, right?
Yeah,
and
okay.
We don't know all the details from just that one sentence.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He doesn't list all the seven. Yeah, yeah. This are Ashes Ish. So non-Jews are also not allowed to marry a married woman. So what does that mean? And non-Jews don't have Kiddushin. There's no official marriage ceremony for B'nai Noach. So what does it mean? What does it mean?
So they don't have divorces?
Oh. That's a
weird.
Huge... Oh, hold on one second.
But it's quite conceivable that non-Jews have their own system.
No, correct. There's no halachic method for non-Jews to get married. But it goes by the convention. Whatever non-Jews consider themselves married...
Exactly.
That's sufficient in non-Jewish halacha, so to speak, to get married. And then presumably the divorce is interesting. So presumably the same should apply for divorce. They decide they're no longer married and they separate and then they're no longer married. But there are those who say, it's not obviously the Pashut understanding, that for non-Jews there is no divorce. Because say we go, the marriage goes by the convention, but they can't get divorced. Because the convention doesn't work for the divorce, but it does work for the marriage.
We don't make the rules for them. They have their
of course
society.
We make the rules for them.
They have their own society. Okay. They don't care what.
Of course we make the rules for them. Where have you been in Mitzvahs B'nai Noach class?
But why shouldn't we let them set up a court system?
Yeah.
So the court system then
they don't listen to
them.
Do what?
You said they were the ones that can make the marriage conventions, and can't they also?
I mean, that is the Pasha understanding that it goes the marriage included in the marriage is the possibility of ending the marriage.
Well, Why does he give this as an example? Why doesn't he say the court system or whatever?
Because this is more fun.
So
if a non-Jewish couple considers themselves married, so then now if she has relations with someone else, then she and the man who has relations with her now violate the prohibition of Eishes Ish according to Dinei B'nei Noach.
Or more to the point, let's say that if a Jew, Chas V'Shalom, has relations with a non-Jewish woman who is married, then that's also...
It's not Misa for a Jew, no.
It's not Misa, okay. No. It's,
I mean, it's not permissible, obviously, but no, it's not a Chiyah Misa to do that. No. Of Eishes...
The husband might have something to say about this.
The Eishes of... You're not allowed to do that. Just because you say something, it doesn't have the death penalty, or it's not... Usser, deraisa, whatever it is. It doesn't mean that it's encouraged and whatever. Okay. The Eishes Av, and the wife of one's father, a non-Jew is not allowed to marry, the Zachar, and male homosexual relationships are not allowed for B'nai Noach, and Behema, and also to be with an animal. Bestiality is not allowed for B'nai Noach. V'chein... Inyan Avodah Zarah, Kulo Nechshav Lohem Mitzvah Achas. They're also not allowed to do, I call it idolatry, but not always idolatry. It's any foreign worship, not of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that also counts as one mitzvah. V'yesh bo kama v'chama pratim. That has many details. Sherei Heim, Shavim Bali Yisrael, Inyan Shechayavim V'chol Ma'asheh Bezdin Shel Yisrael, V'misim Aleha. That anything that a Jewish court could put someone to death for Avodah Zarah, so too non-Jews are not allowed to engage in that type of Avodah Zarah. Uchmoche nemar, achar shehuzeru b'inyan ha-gezel, shehuzeru gamkein b'chol har-chakosav. So the same thing, that just like non-Jews are not allowed to steal, so they're also not allowed to have anything to do with stealing, including desiring someone else's property in an intense and focused way. It doesn't mean that there's like a specific mitzvah for it. No, it's included. They did not have all the details. They have a more generalized legal system. For the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Kiilu Tomar al Derech Mashal Shisirem Akosuv Ish Ish El Kol She'er B'Saro Lo Sigrvu El Ha'im V'Achos V'Chol Asher. It doesn't mean that it says that you're not allowed to marry your mother and your sister and all the close relatives. Okay, but Avozagam Kederech Klal, it's all united. So it's not exactly the same when you think about it. There it says you're not allowed to have arayos. So we have to know what arayos means. And there it says, you're not allowed to do Avodah Zarah. So you have to know what doing Avodah Zarah means. So there it says, you're not allowed to steal. We know what stealing means. It's not... Nisave is something that leads up to it. It's not literally a part of stealing. It's something, I don't know. But whatever it is, so they shouldn't covet either. So good. So this included in, you shall not covet. Aval b'Yisrael ein ha'inyan kein. That's not how it works by Jews. That because, what do we say? Everybody knows this by heart. Reb Chanan ben Akasha says, why do we have so many detailed mitzvos? Why don't we just have the same thing? Why didn't the Torah just say, hey Jews, don't do any rayos? And we'll figure out what that means. Why do we have all the details in each particular mitzvah? Because the more specific mitzvahs that we have that we can fulfill, the more merit that we get.
It's also that if you just leave it to people, this isn't really...
Not that you make it up. That's not what I meant. We know what it means. Continue. That'll be part of the Parsha of Alper or something that we'll figure out what the Arayos means. Why are there all these specific rules? Because they get the more merit for Kal Yisrael.
More credit than if you don't...
More credit, yes. Even though the things are the same for Jews and non-Jews, like the Arayos, like the Avodah Zarah, which are basically the same, Lios tivuyenu. Well, actually, there are a few arayos. That's not exactly sure. So we should be the mitzvos asay v'lavin nifradim. So we have all different asays, positive commandments. We have all different negative commandments. So we get reward for fulfillment of each and every one of these mitzvos. V'chozeh zechus v'tova l'nafshenu. It's all good for our soul. Shekol osa mitzvah achas konelo praklit echad. Now, if you do a mitzvah, then you've acquired for yourself a defender, like a defense attorney.
Yeah.
So every mitzvah goes on the scale, you know, when you're being weighed, if you're a tzaddik or a rasha. Yeah. So we can take all the merits that we can get. Ve'over al zeh ve'koveh machshavto. So if you specifically focus on desiring a specific object owned by your fellow, over alavze, you violated this. The ain bo malchus, but there's no lashes. The fish ain bo maisa. It's lav shein bo maisa. There's no action involved, rather just a thought. Aval onsho godol meod. Your punishment is very great. This can lead to a lot of bad stuff, as is known in the story of Achav and Navos. So who knows Tanakh? Oh. What's the story with Achav and Navos?
He went to the field, and his wife told him, I'll take care of it. It's bad.
Right. So Achav was the king of?
Israel.
Shomron, yeah. So the northern kingdom, and he wanted a vineyard that was owned by Navos, and he wanted to turn it into a garden or something. So it says he got so sad, you know, he couldn't, he just lay down, and he was so upset, and like, dude, you're the king, you know, like, you have better things to do, no? So his wife said basically that. He said, you know, I'll take, why are you so sad? I'll take, you know, I'll take care of it. And basically she had concocted trumped up charges and had him put to death. Navos, not the king. Navos, who owned the vineyard that the king wanted.
Impeach this guy.
Impeach the king?
Yeah.
You can't impeach kings. That doesn't work like that. You have to either you live with it, or you have to overthrow them with revolution. There's no impeaching of monarchs. Okay. What do you mean, Bathsheba?
Oh, Bathsheba. When he wanted her, she was already married.
Yeah. That's a very difficult story. Yes. We know the Chazal tried to defend David HaMelech for this, and they write technical reasons why it might not have been so bad as the plain reading of the Psukim. But yeah, but now he got serious Musar for it.
Even from Nasan Hanavi. Nobody said that Natan did the wrong thing, did they? The
Chachamim. Oh, no, to chastise? No.
So
he was a prophet, of course he did the right thing,
so
yeah.
If he did the right thing, then David couldn't have done the right thing.
Right. It's a complex, and we have Tanakh class, well, we could discuss that more in depth. Yeah. Mitzvah Taf Yud Zayin. Oh, so in that case of Navos, it led to death. Usually it just leads to stealing.
Right.
But here in this case, it actually led to death. So you see that, you think, oh, it's not so bad, I just desire it, you know, maybe I'll steal, stealing isn't so bad, but here there are other things that can happen. Mitzvah Tav Yud Zayin 417, Mitzvah's Achdus Hashem, the mitzvah of God's unity. Shenitztavinu lehamin ki Hashem yizbarach hu apoel kol ha-mitzius, that God does everything in the world. Adon HaKol, the Lord of all, echad b'li shum shituf, that not only that, but he is one without anything else included in the oneness. So shituf. So it's a whole shaila regarding shituf. So what happens? The Talmud the Gemara. If a non-Jew is allowed to take a vow with talking about Shem Shamayim and Dover Acher, including something else, while swearing in the name of God. So which leads to a whole discussion in the Rishonim and the Achronim. So what happens if a non-Jew believes that God is one, but God is comprised of different parts?
Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Like the Trinity. So is that Avodah Zarah for non-Jews or not? So we have, it's not so pashut, but a simple understanding according to most shittas is that it is Avodah Zarah even for non-Jews. The Rambam famously writes that Christians are of the Avodah Zarah, so therefore we have a rule in the first Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah, talks about how 3 days before non-Jewish festivals, you're not allowed to do business with them. So the Rambam, but that only applies in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz Laaretz, it applies only on the festival day itself. So the Rambam writes that the Christians have a festival every week on Sunday.
Right.
But it says that according to the Rambam writes, that one is not allowed to do business with Christians any Sunday. Mm-hmm. No shopping on Sunday, right?
That would
be very, that would be very, very difficult.
You have to live with Christians, so, you know, do
that. Yeah,
right.
Since he, you know, but however, right, the, you know,
the Ashkenazi Rishonim, right?
Yeah,
right, so they write also because that the Christians nowadays are not so religious, and then if you do business with them, they're not going to go to the church and immediately think, okay.
Also, their stores would be closed if they were so religious.
They
are
Christians. I mean, if they're open, they're not.
Yeah.
They've tried to make a law to outlaw the Christians, the government, outlaw opening stores on Sunday. And that would hurt.
We used to have it here.
Oh, that, we have that in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bergen. In Bergen County.
Paramus,
all the Jews closed their stores on Shabbos.
Right.
So that would finish them off.
Right, so that's a problem.
It was a big business day.
It's a huge problem in Bergen County, New Jersey. Bergen County.
Actually.
What?
Just Paramus, I think,
I think
it's not all from Bergen County. No.
Wasn't the, was not the thing? Not Teaneck?
No.
No?
That's Bergen County.
I know.
No, anyway, it's
Paramus,
the stores are closed on Sundays, so there's a problem for Jews. The Jews, a lot of major malls in Paramus, so the Jews in Teaneck can't go shopping on Sundays. It's a big, it's a big problem. I mean, it's nice that the non-Jews get their day of rest, you know,
and
I'm not trying
and
to deprive
the
them.
This the lower level
was
right.
The Paramus of the Jews.
But I thought the question was the whole
right, so I thought that was the issue. I thought Sfarim stores in Teaneck are not allowed to open on...
No.
No?
I grew up in Leonia, okay? No, it's only Paramus, which have where all the malls are located, where they have, you know, the blue law, as it's called.
Some of the working people are...
But how is that Avodah Zarah? If they're open stores, they're not in church, so what's the...
It could be over Avodah Zarah and not be in church on any given week.
This is just a Yerusha.
No, I meant to say... They're not involved.
So that's the idea. So the non-Jews in Chutz Laaretz are not so religious. So that's why that's part of the reason that we're more makel regarding them, even if they are of the Avodah Zarah, because of that reason. So then you have this issue also regarding wine, regarding handling wine. So what's the we know that we're not allowed. The Chazal originally asserted stam yenam, so wine that was produced or handled by a non-Jew, any type of non-Jew, they asserted it even bahana'a. They're not allowed to derive any benefit from it, even.
And Rashi had a vineyard.
So Rashi made kosher wine.
Yeah.
So the if he was really a vintner, okay, whatever. But the. So they, because they,
all his workers have to be Jewish.
Of course.
Yeah,
well, of course. That's
okay. What do you mean? How do you have any kosher winery nowadays? Do you have wineries where all the workers are Jewish?
But I thought the Mevushal takes care of that or something.
Well, before the Mevushal, it has to. There's a certain point before at which it's not Mevushal, by definition. Yeah.
The thing is, if you there still are serious Christians who take seriously the idea of tithing. And if you patronize a Christian on Tuesday and you're contributing to his profits, which he is going to tithe some of it, and it's not all going to real tzedakah, it's going to up to his church.
Mm.
So I'll think about it if you want to do that. It's just a thought.
Yeah, okay. That is a thought.
On the other hand, sometimes it's better that other people do believe in God and laws.
Yeah, that's what the Rambam writes. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim. How do we understand Christianity and Islam? So, how do we understand them? The Rambam writes that that was part of the design of the world that Christianity and Islam should become so widespread. So before the days of Mashiach, it should get people used to the idea of the Bible and one God and things like that. It should get people more... People, when Mashiach comes, everybody has to observe Shabbat Mitzvah. No, it would be too much of a shock if they went from paganism and total hedonism to have to become Noahides or Geri Toshav if they want to live in Eretz Yisrael, whatever. So that it gets them more, gets the world more used to the idea. That's why I like the Jewish perspective on other religions.
Right.
You know, if you ask a Christian, so if you don't believe in their specific brand of Christianity, so you're going to hell. Is that, I don't know, it's, right, so it's, our, I think that the Jewish view of other religions is more reasonable than other religions' view of other religions of the world. Anyway, so if you have wine, so Chazal originally asserted, we know that wine that was actually poured as a libation to Avodah Zarah is asur bahanah. You're not allowed to derive any benefit from that wine. So originally when Chazal made the edict of Stam Yenam, the even regular wine that was produced or touched by, handled by a non-Jew, they asked it bahanah, just as if it was completely, certainly poured to Avodah Zarah because of the very stringent nature of this prohibition. Yeah.
But if it was poured out to Avodah Zarah, yeah, how would it come into your possession? Yeah. It's gone. No.
They used to do a thing at part of Suda when you had goyim at a meal. So they used to
pour a few drops out to the gods and then.
Right. Oh. They used to, with a regular wine that they would drink at a meal, they would pour out some to to their deities. So the question is, what about wine that was handled or produced by a non-Jew who is not Oved Avodah Zarah?
Okay.
So the answer is that the wine is not prohibited bahana. It's not that you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it, but it's still prohibited bishtia. You're not allowed to drink it because a general distancing that we want from non-Jews, they shouldn't be intermarried, etc., etc. So the question is, if Christians are really considered Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and that any wine that they have or handled is usur even bahana, so that created a lot of issues for Ashkenazi Jews. I mean, they couldn't, if somebody gave them a bottle of wine as a present, or as if they were moneylenders or something, and they took some wine as a... as a collateral, right? So then that means they couldn't derive any benefit from it. So that would be very difficult. So that's why the Rama writes, based on a certain Rishonim, he says, no, doesn't matter that they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah, even if they are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, if they're known not to offer libations, then that also means that their wine is only prohibited to be drunk, but you are allowed to derive benefit from them.
Well, what for the wine, would you have if you
sale,
like
it? Yeah. Sale, giving it to someone else
somebody
as a present.
Gives it to me. I can't even give it as a present.
Kedem does
wine.
Business
super
with wine, non kosher wines. Actually, in fact, part of their
oh name. Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah,
what's that?
Yeah. Really? I don't know.
What is that?
Kedem actually. I think they do business. To her,
so the reason being is that Christians are not don't do that. If you go to a private meal, Christians don't pour any wine to their Avodah Zarah. The wine is only used in the church service. So if it's not wine that was actually used in the church service, you know for sure that it was not poured to Avodah Zarah. So therefore, according to the Ramah, the wine would be permitted to derive benefit from. According to the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, who's going with this Svardi approach from the Rambam and others, he holds that Christian wine is even Asur Ba'anah, because they are of the Avodah Zarah, so it doesn't matter that you happen to know that they don't offer libations. But since they're of the Avodah Zarah, that means their wine is even prohibited Ba'anah to derive any benefit from. That's a yeah.
You don't have to worry about wine that's handled by a Muslim, because obviously he's not a very good Muslim to begin with, right?
He could pass you a glass or something, I don't know. Right, well. I mean, again, it's Asur Bishtia, so if you have a non-Jew who is either completely an atheist or worships single god the same way we do, so a Muslim or, like I said, an atheist, so for sure that the wine that they handle is only or produce is only asur bishtia. You're only not allowed to drink it, but it is allowed bahana. You are allowed to derive benefit from it.
How about Hindus?
So if they have a desire, then you might have this.
Really,
then you have this issue with the machlokes and the Mechaber or the Ramah. So if Hindus don't pour wine as libations, so then according to the Ramah, you'd still be allowed to derive benefit from it. But according to the Mechaber, you would not be allowed, because it goes just based on if the non-Jew is an Ovid of Odezara or not.
So until what stage? Until it's bottled? Or?
No, what do you mean? Until it's...
What do you mean? So let's say you have a delivery truck.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's what you mean. Yes, 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 yes.
The driver is non-Jewish.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No. If the rules don't apply if the wine is in a closed container.
Uh-huh.
Why? The Rambam says that ein derech nisuch b'chach, that non-Jews, you might think that what it means is that if it's a closed container, it's like hermetically sealed so they can't have their, you know, negative spiritual energies affected. But that's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that ein derech nisuch b'chach, that non-Jews do not pour libations in a closed container. What does it mean?
How could you?
You shake it. You shake it. The way they used to do is they shake the wine, not necessarily pour it out. So what does that mean, Rav Ozai? If a non-Jew, especially an Ovid Avodah Zarah, actually does take a closed wine bottle, a sealed wine bottle, and lifts it up and swirls it around for the sake of Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to drink even wine from a sealed bottle. Just you don't have to be choshish for that.
Who does that now?
You don't have to be concerned that they'll do it. But if you actually see that they do it, then yeah, you're not allowed to drink the wine, which is a very interesting, interesting
hara.
So if it's a closed container,
for example,
if you have a bottle of wine at home and you open it and you put the cork back in, so that's a closed container. So if a non-Jew handles that bottle of wine, so it does not become usher. If it's open and they lift it up and shake it, so that maybe you do have a problem on your hands. But again, so that's certainly a driver's delivery trucks, you're handling bottles of wine like that. That's for sure not a problem. But there's another halacha, which is not that the container just has to be closed, but if the wine is completely out of Jewish supervision, the wine bottle, then it needs to be sealed, as opposed to just if it's mevushel wine, it needs one seal because they're not gonna pour mevushel wine as a libation. But it just needs one seal to make sure they don't switch it. And if it's not mevushel wine, it needs two seals because there's the concern that maybe they'll be so excited to pour a libation, so they're going to open up even two seals. So because of this idea that non-Jews don't actually pour libations nowadays, it's why Rabbeinu Tam is Mekel, that even non-mevushel wine nowadays even only requires one seal. But nevertheless, l'chatchila, we try to make sure that a wine bottle has two seals, a double seal, when it completely leaves Jewish supervision.
So the cork and the capsule are to suffice for it?
Oh,
so we normally, so we assume that there's a cork in that's put in a clearly professional manner, and then you have a capsule, you have like that wrapping around the cork, so that is considered actually two seals. So it's not so pushed though, because the cork really could be taken in and out without damaging it if you have the right equipment.
Really?
But nevertheless, the question is, do you have to be choshesh that the non-Jew would actually go so far as to do that, and he'd be concerned that maybe he wouldn't be able to put the cork in exactly back right, and you'd notice. So that that would be one thing. So that's why in this shir, Rabbi Zekbach, a prominent Rabbi Machsher of wine, gave before Pesach, he wanted to taina that even just the cork is considered two seals. Why? Because you have to put the cork back in professionally, and the non-Jew is going to be afraid that it's going to be open, that he's not going to be able to put it back in. Plus, you have to get a cork that matches the right wine. In other words, he would have to go searching through the garbage or for to forge the cork in a manner that would match the wine. And therefore, he thought that even a cork itself, again, maybe we prefer to have a better seal, l'chatchila, but he felt that maybe even a cork itself counts as two seals. I'm not exactly 100% convinced with that, but if you have the cork plus the capsule, even if one of them is a little schwach, sometimes you have a problem that the capsule just comes on and off, and you're not. Really, it should be that both the cork and the capsule.
See something is missing.
How does grape juice fit into this?
What do you mean?
Grape juice has some of the same.
Grape juice is wine. Grape juice is the same as wine.
But it only has one seal.
Really?
So you just twist it off.
So it's mevushel, so it only needs one seal. Mm-hmm. But if a non-mevushel grape juice, technically that the one seal twisting off might actually count as two seals, because you have the twisting off business, plus the cap itself is marked with the word kedem or whatever. So that potentially counts. But ideally we want, again, the cork and the capsule both to be marked with the heksher or the name of the winery, if it's an all-kosher winery. And we want the capsule to not be able to be removed without destroying it or ripping it in some way. You can't put it back on.
Have a cork, right? Grape juice.
Yeah. But there are other ways that the bottles are sealed. There's a twist cap, which is considered at least one seal, and for mevushel wine, one seal is good enough. Or
well,
there are other things.
It has to be mevushel in order so it doesn't spoil. So that's why you know.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So almost
you don't have a bottle of non-mevushel grape juice.
So they don't seem to have two seals. The grape juice.
Right, so it doesn't eat. That's what I'm saying.
So buying from a non-Jewish liquor store is fine, right?
Yeah, as long as the bottle is clearly not tampered with.
So you have people who are not Shomer Shabbos. This is the problem, right?
The Chazal...
At your table.
Chazal never mentioned the possibility of a Jew ossering wine, but we assume, the Rishonim assume, that since we know that a Jew who is not Shomer Shabbos is Dino Kigoy, has the same ritual status as a non-Jew, so therefore, we assume that a Jew who is publicly not Shomer Shabbos, it would asr the wine, b'shtia only, obviously. It wouldn't asr b'hanah, but it would not be allowed to drink it. However, we also assume that basically for if you're talking about a not from Jew, a non-Shomer Shabbos Jew, that who would only asr the wine in a manner that for sure 100% asrs the wine according to all opinions. So, for example, we're machmir that when you have a non-Jew, even though some hold this, even this only applies to a non-Jew who's actually over the Avodah Zarah, but when you have a non-Jew and he picks up the bottle of wine and he pours the cup of wine, so the cup of wine is usur because the cup of wine is only poured and exists due to the efforts of the non-Jew. So that's usur. Even though some say that for a non-Jew that's not avodah zarah, that's not a problem. But we also assume that all the wine in the bottle got usur.
What about the weddings where the waiters?
Well, that's supposed to be mevushal. Yeah. All the wine served at affairs is supposed to be mevushal. So if he pours the cup of wine, so the wine in the cup becomes usur because he poured it, and then the stream of wine connecting the wine in the cup to the bottle usurs all the wine in the bottle.
Backwards, you mean?
Right. So for a Jew, not Shomer Shabbos, so we would be makel on that you wouldn't drink the cup of wine that the non-Jew poured. Certainly not if he started drinking it and is now touching it with his lips, etc. So you wouldn't drink the wine that the not from Jew poured, but it would not asr the rest of the wine in the bottle. That's just an example of a way.
Can you give a Jew that is Shomer Shabbos a present? That's wine.
That's not mevushal.
That's not mevushal.
Oh, this is a classic Shaila. Can you give a not from Jew a non mevushal wine because as he's drinking it, he's gonna asr it, so he's gonna be sinning.
What?
Are there so many wines that are not mevushal?
Yes, Israeli.
A lot of wines.
Israeli wines.
Most American wines are mevushal.
Most American wines are mevushal. Yes, that is true. European and Israeli are. In Kedem, yes, in the really Jewish Hamish American brands of wines, so you have this chiluk somehow that the big bottles are not mevushal, the 1.5 liter bottles and the little bottles are mevushal. Okay,
for that actually because. They do the sterilization of it was is done in the bottle. So in other words, if the bottle's too big, they can't heat it up very enough.
Oh.
That's what I was.
Well, maybe that was sort of. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure that's true because the sweet wines, even the big bottles, are pasteurized at a low temperature. Just one that they don't consider high enough to be mevushal. Okay. The dry wines are not heated at all, even in the big bottles. So they do heat. Oh, they do pasteurize the sweet wines. I guess they shouldn't spoil. Anyway, so but what were we saying? So
was that?
About giving a yeah, Lemaisa, it's mutter. Lemaisa, most poskim assume that that's what you don't. Since there are shitas that hold that a Jew doesn't asr wine, and there are and it's himself, and he knows he doesn't report the avodah zarah, and yeah,
if I have a non-from guest, is it better to keep the wine away from him at the table?
If you have a non-from guest, obviously the best thing is to serve mevushal wine. Okay. But again, like I said, if you have a non-from Jew pouring wine from a bottle, so it's not going to asser the bottle. So that's why it's not so terrible if you have non-from Jews at your table. Again, it's best just to avoid all problems because then you could have a problem if they're I don't know, drinking, they're drinking their wines, they also the wine in their glass, and then, you know, you take it to the kitchen, now you turn on the hot water in the sink, and now you maybe you acid your sink, because the wine wasn't kosher. Again, I don't know if it really, there might be coolest.
Oh, I don't really think I want to finish this here.
Right. So obviously the best is to have a bushel wine.
But pay the seder, though, you know, after all, you prefer to have non-bushel wine, I suppose that's the problem, huh?
Yes, you can do it. It's possible to have serve non-mevushal wine and keep it away or make sure. But you should invite not from just your seder. You should. But have the wine be mevushal. It's not so hard. And then even if you want to be machmir, so that really only applies to the balabayas, the one who's making kiddush. But the rest of the wine, just the one cup of the balabayas who's making kiddush. It's supposed to be
just kiddush, not the other.
Right, just kiddush.
Oh, okay.
It's lechatchila. There's a chumra to be that it should be non-mevushal, but again, that's not required completely. You could, if you could use mevushal for that also, according to the strict halacha. And the rest of the wine, except for that one cup on the whole table, you shouldn't have any problems if you just make sure it's all mevushal. Shenemar, what? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is the most famous pasuk. V'zo mitzvah sasei, this is a positive commandment. Eina hagada. This is not just God informing you. Listen up, dude.
Listen up, yeah.
It's, God is one, no? It's actually a mitzvah. Aval peru shema, kilomar kabel mimenu davar ze v'da'ihu v'ha'amein bo. Accept this, know it, and believe in it. Ki Hashem shu Elokeinu echad hu, that Hashem, who is our God, is one. The Araya shezoi mitzvah sasei, there's actually a positive commandment. Amram zichrono levracha, tamid b'midrashim al menas liyached shmo, in order to unify his name. Kidei lakabel olav malchus shamayim. You should accept the kingship of heaven. Kolomar, hahoda b'yichud v'ha'emuna. What is the accepting the kingship of heaven? That means the accepting and the acknowledgement of the unity and the belief in it. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua, this is well known. Ki zeh ikar amunas kol b'nei ha'olam, this is the main thing of all the people in the world are supposed to know. Ha'amud ha'chazak shalev kol ben da'as ha'mokhalav. It's the main pillar that any knowledgeable, a smart person should know. Midini ha'mitzvah, what are the halachas? Masham mizichon ha'levracha, shechayev kol echad mi'yisrael, le'horeg ha'mitzvah zichud. You're required to give up your life rather than deny the unity of God. If you don't admit the unity of God and acknowledge it, it's as if you denied God's existence. That the fullness of God's kingship can only be with unity, with full unity. V'leiv kol chacham leiv yivchan zeh, and anybody with a knowing heart will understand this. Kain harei mitzvah zo miklal isra avodah zara. It's as if it's like a facet of avodah zara. She'anachnu mitzuvin le'aragal v'chol makom v'chol shav. We deny the unity of God. It's as if we violate the mitzvah of avodah zara, which we're obviously required to give our lives rather than violate. V'yaser pratem efuzarim emidrashus v'makomus b'talmud. It's in all different places in the Midrashim and places in the Gemara. V'sham ma'isim harbe mikama b'nei Yisrael gedol miktam shenergu al kedushas yichud baruch hu. The people give up their lives literally for the unity of God. Zecher kulam levracha. They're all remembered for the good. It was interesting that there was an article. The latest issue of Tradition Journal is talking about Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's famous essay Rupture and Reconstruction. 25.
Did you hard copy yet?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Do you want it?
So somebody wrote about how the mimetic tradition, Dr. Soloveitchik was famously talking about how the breakdown of just a natural family transmission of Judaism. Again, we can argue with his thesis, maybe the exact things, whatever. So somebody said, even if people are more medactic on the halacha and this and that, there's something about the mimetic tradition, like the visceral attitudes towards Judaism. So he talked about how there was a someone in his essay was talking about when he was a shul rabbi, a woman in his congregation came over to him and said that her daughter is dating a non-Jew. So she wanted to know if it's okay if they eventually get married the Jewish daughter of this congregant and her non-Jewish boyfriend, can they make a deal that if they have a son, that the father will allow the child to have a bris, and the mother will allow the child to be baptized?
Oh, God. Oh my God.
So she asked him, like, with a straight face, Orthodox rabbi, is that such a relation? You know, obviously it's not ideal, the whole relationship, but in such a situation, is it permissible to agree to such a demand? But he said he was so shocked that somebody would even, like, consider asking an Orthodox rabbi that it would, like, a normal thing on the table, mm-hmm. the idea of equality. Baptism.
Equality.
Huh?
Equality.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, like, so this was something that was transmitted from, you know, at age 5 to every Jew for the last 1,000 years, that you literally burn at the stake rather than submit to baptism. And now you're saying, asking me if it's permissible in certain situations. It's crazy.
The kid is Jewish anyway.
I understand, but anyway, v'noeg is mitzvah b'chol makom b'chol zman v'zachar min hakevos, applies to males and females in all places and all times. If you don't believe in the unity of God, you didn't perform this positive commandment. Shar mitzvah satorah, and you didn't perform any mitzvah really in the whole Torah. Kikulam tluyos beemunas elokuso v'yichudo, that everything is dependent on belief in God and the unity of God. You missed out the whole Torah if you don't believe that. V'nikra kofer beikar v'enu mikal b'nei Yisrael. It's, you're not even like Jewish really. I mean, halachically you're Jewish. You can still contract marriage and divorce, and your child will still be Jewish. But spiritually, you are not part of the Jewish people. Ela mikal haminim, you're just a heretic. V'hivdilo Hashem lira'ah, God will separate you for bad. V'amamin b'Hashem uvotech bo yisugav, that you'll be high if you believe in God. Not drugs, but rather uplifted, yes. V'zos achas min ha-mitzvot sham amarnu b'tchilas ha-zefer sh'adam chayeben b'hasmada. We have the famous institution of mitzvos t'midios. So matzah you have to eat on the first night of Pesach. Sitting in the sukkah, you got to sit on sukkahs. There's some mitzvahs that you have to do 24/7, all the time, literally. And one of them is believe in the unity of God. There's no break from this. Not even the tiniest second are you exempt from this mitzvah.